On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's a roadmap on where we plan to go. Mask mandate litigation resurfaces with the highly contagious Delta variant and state lawmakers concerned about overreach. The Justice Department sues to remove Fred Prehn from the Natural Resources Board. But we start with the battle underway over the once-a-decade realignment of legislative and congressional districts, taking a look at redistricting legal fights on the horizon. What do you want to know about court challenges to the map-drawing process and what it means for elections? It's 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is editor at Wispolitics. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Before we start unpacking redistricting litigation flying all around, kind of ground us, if you will, in where we are in the timeline for redrawing maps and the stages we go through now that the new census data is in.
Well, we are way behind where we normally would be. Usually in census data year, you get the data in the spring. You've got maps, at least try to draw them by the summer. And we're probably in court by now in a normal year. We're not normal because of COVID-19, obviously, and some other things have pushed it back. So where we're at is that the data was released. The process can begin to draw maps at the state level and the local level. We're already seeing county boards and city councils, you know, start putting maps together because they have elections coming up in the spring. They're a little more tighter crunch than the state is. Right now, Governor Evers has had his People's Maps Commission going on for a while now. They're taking submissions of proposed maps. The state legislature now has now opened a portal that you can also submit a map to them. That's interesting with that portal for the legislature is that the deadline for a map from the public is October 15th, I believe. Mm-hmm. That gives people an idea that more than likely you're going to see legislature try and pass a map sometime in the fall floor period. And the question becomes, which court do we end up in to draw the actual map before it's all said and done?
Yeah, and, you know, we usually hold predictions till the end, but do you have any thoughts about the volume or substance that you foresee in these court challenges going through this process?
Well, we've already got the one filed in federal court by half dozen Democratic voters. That's interesting because that suit basically says, look, there is no chance that the Republican-controlled legislature and Democratic Governor Tony Evers will reach consensus on a map. So court, you should set a deadline for them to act now and lay out a process that you will draw the map if they fail. Republicans, though, have answered back to the lawsuit saying, number one, this is premature. You should give the legislature and the governor a chance at least first. And their second argument is, even if the legislature and the governor fail to draw a map, this should go to state court. Now, why that is interesting is that the perception is Republicans want to go the state court route, not the federal court route. Mm-hmm. Remember, the state Supreme Court is controlled by conservatives 4-3, although, you know, Brian Hagedorn has been kind of a swing jurist on a number of important issues, but still perceived as a conservative. So a 4-3 majority, Republicans feel like they would get a better shot, a better shake, better map out of the state courts than the federal courts, because even though it's a different panel that's been created for this Democratic lawsuit, the federal court out of the Western District has already basically said, hey, the map you guys drew a decade ago was a political gerrymander. So they feel like they would get a less receptive audience for an argument that'll probably go along the lines of, hey, this map was drawn 10 years ago. We should stay close to that map because it was actually drawn by lawmakers in the normal process rather than scrapping that and starting over.
Yeah. So who hears these cases matters almost as much as the substance of the cases.
Yeah. And don't forget, even if the state Supreme Court draws the map, there'll more than likely be a lawsuit in federal court to review it. The key, though, is it's a different process if you draw the map and if you review the map. So let's say, in theory, Republicans, and our guess is that there'll be a Republican-filed lawsuit in state court at some point. Let's say that lawsuit is filed, the state Supreme Court draws the map. The federal court would still review it, but review it for things like, does it comply with the Federal Voting Rights Act? Does it comply with representation for minorities? All these kinds of things. But it's not drawing the lines themselves. And remember, 10 years ago, that map that was drawn by lawmakers was challenged. There was a federal court that redrew a line for an assembly district to help with Hispanic representation, but that was it. They didn't scrap the entire thing. So So that's what's very important about this process, is who draws the lines in the first place.
We're talking with J.R. Ross of WisPolitics about the redistricting process, the related litigation, where things stand now. Have you been following the redistricting debate between Republicans and Democrats in Wisconsin? What model should Wisconsin try to emulate? Join in 800-642-1234. J.R., who foots the bill for all this litigation?
Taxpayers. So Republicans have retained attorneys that actually they signed contracts before a lawsuit was even filed in anticipation of a lawsuit. So the one contract that I saw is a cap of $965,000, I believe, in 2021. Now, don't forget, we're already in August. The lawsuits are just being filed. We may go into 2022 before it's all said and done. This contract was silent about what would cost beyond that. There's a second contract that did not have a cap on fees, but did cap, like, you know, hourly rates and those kinds of things. So the taxpayers will pay for those private attorneys Republicans have hired. As far as the state's attorneys, like the Department of Justice will be involved, they're all funded by taxpayers, those attorneys. So it's going to be us who pay for these lawsuits, which is typically what happens.
We have divided government. Democrat as governor, legislature controls, or Republicans control the legislature. Is that extremely problematic for this contentious issue of redrawing maps?
Going back to the 1960s, I believe, every decade but one, the courts have drawn the legislative boundaries. Now, in other years, congressional lines have also been challenged and drawn by courts. Sometimes they'll reach consensus, even when they haven't reached consensus on the legislative districts. But more than often than not, it's the courts that end up drawing the lines in Wisconsin because we have a history of split government.
Will the Governor's People's Maps Commission have a say in the final product here? What is the status of this commission?
So they've been taking submissions. They've been having hearings. The going bet in the Capitol is that once there's this, whoever ends up hearing the lawsuit, right, and the court asks, send us maps, that the People's Commission map will be a submission from the governor. Now, what's going to be interesting is, in theory, that People's Maps Commission is supposed to be about competitiveness, right? How equal can you make seats? If you're a Democrat on the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, do you want to submit your own map that is better for Democrats, right? Because this is a very partisan exercise of redistricting. The map that the Governor's Commission may draw may not be the maximum benefit for a Democrat that you could create with the population that we have. So might Democrats try and file something that's really, really partisan, which would make the People's Map Commission, People's Commission map look pretty moderate, right? Pretty reasonable. Republicans, likewise, do you want to file a map that looks as good as possible for you, much like the one we have in place right now, or do something that's more moderate, more competitive, to try to show the courts, hey, we're trying to be reasonable about this. We're not trying to, you know, play a game and maximize our numbers here. We want you to find this map to be acceptable. Those are choices they're going to have to make when they submit their maps to the courts.
What do you make of this portal system, this grassroots approach to say, hey, you know, hey, people, hey, public, send us your map?
Well, it's all part of an effort in the big picture to get people really engaged on this issue, because there is a segment of the population who cares very deeply about redistricting and the fact that Republicans drew a map that was very beneficial to them a decade ago. I don't know that this issue is one of those ones that really drives voters, but there's a very passionate group that care about it. As far as, though, like a big issue next fall, I don't know that Governor Evers is going to run his campaign next fall on redistricting, right? It's going to be taxes and schools and healthcare and those driving issues. But again, there's a very passionate group of people who care about this, and they're really tuned into it.
Well, we'll be watching that. J.R. Ross is with us, WisPolitics editor, has covered state government politics for decades. Moving on to the polarizing issue of mask wearing. Do you live in Dane County? How do you feel about the new mask mandate? Do you support the decision? Are county officials overstepping their authority? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with J.R. Ross here on the Ideas Network. We have WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. J.R. is taking us through one issue at a time. In a state COVID briefing earlier this month, Governor Evers was asked whether he'd issue another mask mandate.
Of course, the legislature and also the Supreme Court made some decisions. But at the end of the day, we will be following the science.
The state Supreme Court struck down the governor's statewide mask mandate at the end of March. How do you feel about the challenge to Dane County's indoor mask mandate? Join in 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross with us for about 10 more minutes. So, J.R., the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty sues Dane County over this mask mandate. What are you seeing out of this litigation?
Well, a couple of things interesting. One, that went into effect at 12:01 a.m. on Thursday. The lawsuit had asked the Supreme Court to issue an emergency injunction to prevent it from going into effect, period. The court instead gave local officials until noon tomorrow to file their response. So the mask mandate remains in place for right now. Basically, the lawsuit is arguing that, look, court, you've already reined in local officials in this other lawsuit about closing schools. You should do the same here. What I find interesting, the big picture, is that a year ago, there was all this talk about from some of the Republican base about wanting to challenge Governor Evers on the statewide mask mandate. But Republicans shied away from that because they feared that it would come back to bite them in the elections in November, that they would appear anti-mask. The ground has shifted in Republicans' minds that the public is now tired of stuff. I mean, the line I heard last week was, we are tired of COVID and we're done with it, but COVID's not done with us, right? So there's still this pandemic going on, but people don't really care for the restrictions anymore. So Republicans feel like they are in a better position right now to challenge things, to push things like, you know, legislation banning vaccine passports, to talk about things like that, because they feel like that they have a base that's very engaged and excited about this issue, and that people on the other side are kind of worn out by the entire thing.
Yeah. Is there a better chance of getting a mask order to hold if it's done through an ordinance or not a health order issued through a public health department or by a health commissioner?
Yeah, the lawsuit raises two arguments. One is that the local health official did not have the power in this case to do this, right? Basically, that the local official didn't have the power to do this, period. And two, the local official in this case didn't have the power on her own to do it. It should have been approved by the county board and the city council. So what I'm wondering is, if this is struck down, could you see local officials like the county board, the city council, pass a resolution approving a mask mandate and do it that way? Then what would happen?
Yeah, so it remains to be seen there. What about the Tavern League of Wisconsin, other organizations filing similar lawsuits last year? Do you see any of those echoes this year, or are we just too far along in the pandemic?
Well, other than Dane County, I guess there was discussion about a mask mandate in Kenosha. Mm-hmm. There was a city council meeting last week that was quite contentious, but we're not seeing like large or a lot of local governments trying to push mask mandates again. It's just not on the front burner like it was a year ago.
Yeah. Let's move on to Attorney General Josh Call filing a lawsuit to remove Fred Prehn from the Natural Resources Board. Explain what is going on here.
So typically in Wisconsin, if you are appointed to a board and your term expires and your replacement has not been confirmed, you have the ability to stay on that role. That's happened in the past. It's not unusual. But what's being argued here is that there are state laws that specifically say if you're on board X and your term expires, you can stay on. The law on the DNR board, according to the lawsuit, is silent on that issue. So Josh Call is arguing that Dr. Prehn has stayed on beyond his term. He should be removed. Either the court should remove him or issue a decision that says that Governor Evers has a power to remove him. Dr. Prehn, however, points to a memo from the Legislative Council, which is the nonpartisan legal arm of the legislature, from May, that says basically he has a power to stay on this board. So we're going to find out what's going on. What's unique here compared to past examples of people staying on is Dr. Prehn served his full 6-year term, got a confirmation hearing. He was confirmed by the state Senate, and he's on the board. In years past, like I saw this happen when Governor Doyle was elected in 2002, there were a number of appointments by Governors Thompson and McCallum that had not been confirmed. And Doyle rescinded a lot of them like in one swoop. The difference then was those appointments had not gotten a confirmation hearing. So some of the people said, hey, I'm going to stay in my role because the Senate has a confirmed replacement. It was controlled by Republicans at the time. They haven't confirmed my replacement. And I basically got the short end of the stick with my term because I didn't get to serve a full one, but because of the way this thing happened. This is a little bit different. Now, the big question going forward is, what's the end game? If the courts say that Prane can stay on this board, well, then what? Republicans feel pretty good about the 2020 election right now because they're seeing signs that things are blowing their way. But if Evers wins re-election next fall, then what? Are you going to have a bunch of Walker appointees serve for 6 and 8 years to try to keep these boards from becoming majority Evers appointments? And the key with the DNR board is Prane staying on keeps it 4-3 Walker appointees. If he left, then it becomes a majority Evers appointees. That's like my question is about the end game. What's next? If Evers wins, then what are we going to do? We're going to have the standoff go on indefinitely.
We're talking with J.R. Ross, editor at WisPolitics, as we look at litigation politics here on the State Capitol Report. With your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Kenneth in Janesville wants to circle back to redistricting. Kenneth, hi.
I've got a couple of questions. The first is, what does it take to do it in Wisconsin like they do in Iowa? And are the Republicans admitting that they cannot win an election without putting their thumb on the scale, so to speak?
And, Kenneth, when you say how they do it in Iowa, what specifically are you referring
to?
Yeah,
they have – it's an impartial election board or districting board that divides the state
Let's get JR. JR, go ahead.
Sure. So in Iowa, the process is this kind of nonpartisan agency draws a map and it goes to the legislature for an up or down vote. And then if they reject it, they draw another map. And then I think there's a third map as the final kick at the cap with that process. They have to approve it. And if they don't, they either have to do a bill or something like that. So it's a different process in that regard. Wisconsin could change state law and go to that or do a constitutional amendment to go to that. Republicans have zero interest in that. They see it as they don't trust anything that's quote unquote nonpartisan. They think we biased against them. And honestly, Democrats had control of the legislature and from 2009 to 11 and didn't pass that process. They had the opportunity and didn't do it. Some Dems now kick themselves in the butt for not doing it. But they felt like after the big wins in 08 with Obama on the ticket that they were going to be in a good shape to, you know, be in charge for a while. Then it changed. And as long as Republicans are in charge, they're not going to go to that system because they don't like it. And two, even though Wisconsin is a purple state at the top of the ticket, if you look at the way voters are concentrated, there are a lot of Democrats are in Dane and Milwaukee counties. It's hard to draw a true 50-50 map because of the population. So now you can draw a much more equal one in terms of partisan balance in the legislature that we have right now, but a true 50-50 map would be difficult at best because of where we're concentrated for voters.
Kenneth, thank you. Annalisa now in Green Bay on redistricting as well. Hi, Annalisa.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to say that I am one of the people who are passionate about gerrymandering because gerrymandering makes the party, makes the elected representative less accountable to the people. They just do what the party tells them to do. And as far as you're saying population redistribution, well, of course, certain kinds of voters are concentrated in certain places, but that doesn't foreclose the possibility that you can draw a map is more nonpartisan than the one that we're operating on now.
Quickly, Annalisa, how long have you been very concerned about gerrymandering, very concerned about the redistricting process?
I have been concerned about this for at least 5 years.
Okay. Thank you, Annalisa. JR, your thoughts there. You know, Annalisa being in the camp of this is a really huge issue for Wisconsin.
Redistricting and the maps that we have drive a lot of the partisanship you see in the Capitol because you only have to win your primary. So I have to worry about it. A lot of these seats, they are so safe that so long as you fend off any primary challenges, you're good to go. Well, that means rather than catering to 50.1% of your district, you're catering to basically 25% change, right? That's your primary. And the reality is, like, if you go in Madison, you can't draw a 50-50 map on the isthmus. It's not possible. There are just too many Democrats. Likewise, if you go out to like Washington County, Wisconsin, over in the southeastern part of the state, you can't draw a 50-50 Democratic seat. There just aren't enough Democrats there. So that's what I'm talking about, the concentration of voters. It makes it very difficult. There are ways to make the map less partisan, and we'll see how that process plays out. But to the point that it really does impact how the Capitol operates, or quite frankly now, it does not operate. It's kind of dysfunctional these days. And part of it is because of that basic issue of who's in the Capitol, who wins these races, and how they approach the job, because, again, they're trying to win primaries, not win general elections, because they're almost guaranteed to win come November.
JR, appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too. JR Ross, editor at WisPolitics. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Senator Lena Taylor of Milwaukee. We will discuss the state of policing in Wisconsin 1 year after a Kenosha officer shot Jacob Blake multiple times in the back, renewing national attention on police use of force. What emotions come up for you today about policing? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. Protesters outside the Kenosha Police Department in April. Footage there from WMAQ-TV in Chicago. It has been 1 year since Jacob Blake was shot 7 times by a Kenosha police officer, setting off riots and protests over police brutality and structural racism in Kenosha, in Wisconsin, in America. Are you from Kenosha? What do you think of policing today? What is your message to a state lawmaker on police reform? 800-642-1234. State Senator Lena Taylor is a Democrat who represents areas north of Milwaukee, including Shorewood, Glendale, and Wauwatosa. Senator Taylor, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. What is coming up for you today on this day, a year after the shooting of Jacob Blake?
Good morning. My heart goes out to Jacob in his new journey, not having the use of his lower extremities in the same way that he had been accustomed to. But my largest heart goes out to the children who mm-hmm. had to watch a dynamic that will affect how they see leadership, how they see police, their relationship with their father. All of those things are affected when you as a child have such an adverse childhood experience, like seeing your father shot by a police officer. So my heart goes out to them and that journey that the children and the family have to go on. And of course, the community has the consequences or the fallout that happens from an incident where an officer is justified in his action, but clearly de-escalation and other options are what everyone looking at the video would hope for, no different than people hoped for something different from George Floyd, but the truth in the video of what happened with him. But the truth of the matter is, you know, Jacob is in a different place, right, than George, which is a blessing, but still carries its own burdens.
Your colleague, State Senator Bob Wirch, who represents the city of Kenosha, he joined us a day after the shooting.
We have to understand each other. We have to work together. I don't know any other answers. Clearly, we need to be accountable for our actions, what the police have done.
So how do you think Jacob Blake being shot has reshaped conversations about race and about policing in Wisconsin?
I don't know about reshaped it, but I will say that it did, maybe the better word is force us to have some conversations. And I'm not going to suggest that those conversations are the end all and be all, because they are not. We still have not arrived. We were able to do a bill to encourage and demand, actually, the teaching of the Holocaust, which happened in another country. but not the Holocaust of Black people that have happened in this country. So that shows you that where we are, right? And that now people are standing up saying they don't agree with critical race theory, which frankly is just demanding the truth and teach the truth. Christopher Columbus did not discover America, right? And the circumstances of African Americans in the United States has been a journey that's similar to many of the things that people experienced in the Jewish people experienced in the Holocaust. So our race relations, our race conversations have not come to the place of all peaches and cream. It's still maybe some of the, a lot of the pits that are in the cherry, but I will say that we at least had some, and that in some ways is progress. And where we are on police reform is surely not where I would like to see us be, but we at least are not in the same exact location and place that we were at before.
There's been some movement, and I want to look more closely at legislation becoming law. The 2021 Wisconsin Act 75 that Governor Evers signed into law earlier this month that sets a statewide use of force policy, allows deadly force only as a last resort, and air quotes there in last resort. How much does this solve systemic injustice or make inroads?
I will say it does not solve it. I will say it, in my opinion, it makes inroads. I've often said to people that when I set out to do legislation on police reform with individuals who are at an entirely different extreme than I may be, maybe they saw the George Floyd matter as something that was a reflection of someone, a criminal, you know, doing something and that person having the reactions that they did because of drug addiction. I don't agree with that by any means. However, I don't get to make law in a vacuum with people who just think like me. Matter of fact, they're in, the people in control aren't with me often at all on these kinds of issues. So to get to a place where we could come to a center on some items that we need to have a standard, that we need to say that we're not okay, right, with excessive force use, you know, that's basically what that bill says. I think that was important to lay that foundation. I think it was important to say that policy has to be available so that there's no confusion of what the policy is. You know, my father says you can't expect what you don't inspect. This was an opportunity, or at least a step to try to state what we expect so we can go back and collect data and keep those things so that we can inspect it later. And hopefully that will help for legislators that come behind me to be able to continue to move the ball, move the needle, to bend the arc, you know, in Martin Luther King's words, more towards justice.
You know, when you say they're coming to a center, it reminds me of the Bipartisan Assembly Task Force and the work of Representative Sheila Stubbs and Jim Steinke from the Assembly. And I'm wondering your thoughts there on ultimately what that task force was able to put forth and Governor Evers signing four bills into law related to their work.
Well, I will tell you that them coming aboard with bills that Senator Wangard and I did shucks nearly a year before the task force was even formed is important that they got to the same place that we were at so that Governor Evers could sign those matters. I think that the task force was flawed from the beginning. If you have a task force, but it's only on one of the houses and not both, it's not going to be whatever it's suggesting that when you have the co-author doing emails with the leadership saying that this is a farce, it puts you in a position that it cannot be all that it needs to be. But what I will say is that I love that it allowed for people in the community, people on the front lines, people who are law enforcement, people across the spectrum to be a part of discussions
and to have to hear each other. And for that, I commend the co-chairs for being able to create that kind of environment. And it wasn't easy, you know, for that type of environment to be laid out. But I do believe that it allowed people to hear each other who normally would not. And I think that is part of what Senator Wirch was saying, is that, you know, we have to, period, we have to communicate more and we have to hear each other more.
We're talking about policing with State Senator Lena Taylor, Democrat representing part of Milwaukee, its surrounding communities. With your thoughts on policing today, 800-642-1234. Jack is joining us from Caledonia. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
How are you guys today?
Good morning, Jack.
How are you? Hey, we talked about all these things, you know, when this started a year ago. And I called into the radio station. I said, you know, the thing that bothered me about all these situations where the police officer has to escalate, you know, his actions to arrest somebody, it comes to the point of the person resisting arrest. And when you get when a police officer gets involved in a situation like that, he's got a chance of, you know, losing his life, getting injured, losing his job, going to jail, all these things. And the person that is causing the situation by resisting arrest, you know, is going to get a $150 fine or, you know, something really minor. And my point was that, you know, we got to increase the arrest. I've been arrested, and it was, you know, I did something wrong. I understood that. I was arrested, you know, taken to jail, got money to get out of jail, and went to court and, you know, went in front of a judge, and that was it. You know, no blood was lost, okay? But, and so I'm just saying that, you know, people that get, when you get arrested, just, hey, I can get arrested. I did something wrong. Accept the fact and let the policeman do his job. And then the lawyers will do their jobs and the judge will do their jobs. It's not, you know, taking it into your own hands and starting to fight the officer. He doesn't want that. You know?
Jack, you sound like the guy who tells the woman in the middle of labor, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. You don't know the experience because you're not living it. And so what I will say, Jack, is that I respect, if I could finish, Jack, I let you, if I could. I do understand the concept, Jack, of what you're speaking about. Different experiences. There are different levels of trauma. There's different levels of anxiety. I'm going to give a perfect example. Just the other night, my brother is driving. He works in Hartford. He's driving from Hartford, and he's driving several of his colleagues, his colleagues that work with him, back from Hartford. The officer, deputy sheriff, stops him. And he stops him because he says he doesn't have a plate. Well, first of all, that's not true. There is a plate. There's a temporary plate, and very boldly from the back. The officer then notices when he comes to the car that there are individuals in the car without seatbelts. So the officer now wants everyone's ID that's in the car. He wants to give everyone a citation for a seatbelt. It's 1:50 in the morning. They're coming from work. They've worked a long, full shift. And so the officer has discretion. He could have said, oh, I'm so sorry. I see the plate, just like has happened before, and let him go. Or the officer can use the discretion to do different. When my brother called me at 1:40 in the morning, the anxiety that got me up out my bed to drive down 41 to find where he was is because people who look like him and me, Jack, they don't get the experience, Jack, that you might get. And the reality is that I do agree that, you know, cooperate and things may not escalate. But I also know is that when an officer looks at someone who looks like me, often, not always, what happens instead is that we don't get the same discretion, Jack, that you get. So whether you agree or disagree, the reality is that my brother got stopped when he was doing nothing wrong. My son got stopped, Jack, taking a turkey to a neighbor, put in the back of a squad, stopped and frisked. So it's easy to tell me, Jack, what you think, and I receive that, but you don't walk in the shoes. And so as a result of that, I believe that another thing that could happen is that officers can de-escalate better so that the biases that exist because of race won't won't leave us in a position of a Sandra Bland or others where a small thing escalates into someone not coming home.
We're going to pause there with State Senator Lena Taylor, stays with us on the State Capitol Report as we discuss police reform on this one-year anniversary of the Jacob Blake shooting. What are your thoughts on law enforcement's use of force? Do you think prospective officers should undergo a psychological exam prior to employment? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with State Senator Lena Taylor here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Democratic State Senator Lena Taylor as we look at issues facing Milwaukee in these times. Policing, the pandemic, nearly a half million Milwaukee County residents have received at least the first dose of the COVID vaccine. That's the latest data from the State Health Department. State Senator Lena Taylor is with us for about 9 more minutes. Before we move on to the pandemic, I want to ask you about legislation that you're working on with other state senators supporting a bill that would require prospective law enforcement officers to complete a psychological exam prior to employment. Can you explain this bill?
Well, the bill adds to the response of the standard board for them to establish some minimum education and training standards for admission to employment for law enforcement officers. It's just minimum curriculum requirements. It's at least giving us some type of standard and requirements for recertification and advanced courses and things along those lines for their annual recertification training. This is a way, from my perspective, for this bill, you know, just to provide us a way for people to try to take a snapshot, you know, on what the state of mind of individuals may be, because it's a very trauma a base type of job. And I think often we don't think about the mental health of law enforcement and their families, which is one of the reasons that I think addiction as well as divorce are high among law enforcement.
How do you think the bill would affect recruitment of future officers?
I think recruitment has become a challenge, period, in this state of, you know, people being very displeased with and vocal about their displeasure with where we are with community police relationships. But I do believe that it will allow for who we recruit for individuals to have better information. I think that no different with an average person that who you are and what you experience follows you in your work environment. I think that we need to be able to know the state of mind because we depend on law enforcement, as well as, if I could be honest, we often have people who were in the service or who are in the service. My son is presently in the service now. And I think we have to make sure that individuals are not coming with a military mentality to the police force, because militarization is something that we want to reduce. We want to experience more de-escalation. And so I just think this is just a way to make sure that our officers are best prepared to embrace community policing.
Senator Taylor, one other thing I want to run by you. There's this new investigation out of Wisconsin Watch. It found nearly 200 law enforcement officers currently employed in our state were fired from previous jobs in police departments, or resigned instead of being fired, or quit before completion of an internal investigation. What are your thoughts there?
It's one of the reasons that one of the bills that I also did with Senator Wangard is one where your experiences can go with you or should go with you, and that is available to the next place that you go. Often that has not been so. And so I believe that it is important for that piece to happen. I think it also is a challenging statement or fact for us to see where we are with that. I think that it does mean that we need more in our process, not only psychological, but also what have been your experiences, i.e. someone from Wauwatosa, one of my districts, he's shot and killed like four people in a very short period of time of being on a force. That is the type of thing that I think, three people, that is the type of thing that I think that someone needs to know. And I think someone then needs to be able to say, what can we do different in our training so that he can be more on a de-escalation level? These aren't people who shot at him. You know, these are not people who maybe even in some situations had a weapon. You know, either way it goes, my point is I believe that something, letting individuals know what their prior experiences were on a force is very important. We've shown that it's best.
Yeah.
It's been shown that it would be best to have that information.
We're talking with State Senator Lena Taylor, Democrat representing part of Milwaukee, its surrounding communities. You can join in with questions you have about policing, the pandemic, things that you want State Senator Lena Taylor to know as part of representation. 800-642-1234. Looking at the pandemic, last month, Milwaukee Health Department issued a mask advisory for all residents, regardless of vaccination status. What more should be done through your eyes in order to stop the spread of the virus?
You know, everything. I think we all should consider ourselves a part of the solution and figure out what we can do. Get vaccinated, you know, beyond getting vaccinated, you know, determine if the vaccination that you took, if there's a need for a booster, and if you're 7, 8, 9 months in, making sure that that happens, wear your mask. If you are inside, wear your mask. If you are outside, you probably don't have to wear your mask, but if you are not 6 feet, you should. Be a part of the solution is what I want to say. And we can't expect anything but an increase after the Bucks championship. The truth of the matter is those were Delta spreaders because we had thousands of people that were down in downtown Milwaukee. And so we're going to, you know, have some roads and some corners to turn because of our willingness to be extremely excited for the Bucks and forget we were in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, and you say Bucks, and I have to ask, you know, winning that NBA championship, what does it mean for Milwaukee? What does it mean with, you know, for your thoughts on the team's victory?
Oh, first of all, let me say, go Bucks! Yes! Losing my voice even trying to say it out loud. And I have to say that it was great to be able to see how much businesses that had lost during the pandemic could acquire business, you know, downtown. It was great to see that. It lets individuals know that we are a conference place that they can bring their conferences to and be an amazing place and have a great time. It shows you how beautiful the Deer District is and what an amazing event location it can be outside and inside. And it says that the investment was worth saving the 2,000 jobs that were in the previous arena and very candidly for what is grown from there. I love the marketplace that they're doing now. And so if you live in another area of the state and you go to a farmer's market, imagine a farmer's market in the Deer District. That's the kind of thing that's going on now, giving businesses an opportunity to pop up in a place where people are often coming so that they can get their Bucks gear.
State Senator Taylor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lena Taylor, Democratic State Senator representing areas north of Milwaukee, including Shorewood, Glendale, and Wauwatosa. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.